We are recording and great. Okay. So what is a trifle?
In this case, it's a dessert.
Okay, so it's a dessert, right? And it means also something unimportant, you know, like, oh, it's just a trifle, right? The other
right.
meaning, though, is it makes me think of Jane Austen, where Mr. Darcy says to Lizzie Bennet, you are too generous to trifle with my affections. And so to trifle there as a verb, it means to treat with a lack of respect. Or to treat as not important. So I think we're going to see both, all three actually meanings of trifle in the story. So let us begin. Pinky was making the trifle this week. Trifle was the only dessert offered on Thursday nights. It was expected, smiled at, disregarded. The meal itself drew customers to the local, the soup, the salad, the main dish, the cheese, the wines. And then, at the end of the repast, patrons idly consumed a bit of trifle with their coffee. Real coffee, Marvin called it. Okay, so what do we learn about Pinky? What do we learn about the local? What do we learn about trifle? So Pinky was making the trifle this week means that there's always somebody making the trifle that week. This was Pinky's turn. So we understand already just from the very first sentence that she's part of a group, you know, that makes the trifle on a weekly basis. Now, this is Edith Perlman loves to pull a fast one on you. She really does. When you hear trifle was the only dessert offered on Thursday nights, I don't know about you, but I was thinking, oh, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Wednesday nights, you know, they offer a different dessert. And then, of course, later in the story, we find out that Thursday night is the only night they serve dinner, you know, so she trifles with us a little bit. So it was expected, smiled at, disregarded. Okay. So they know it's coming. They know it's coming as they know the various parts of the repast. The word repast tells you that it's a very it's a very formal meal. And it has all of the courses that we hear about. And trifle is the end. And real coffee. Real coffee, Marvin called it. So there are standards here. About the trifle, Marvin said to Pinky during her first week at the local 5 months ago. So this is telling us that she's telling the story both in the now and in the 5 months ago, what happened to her. So, he stocked the best rum, the freshest eggs, the thickest cream, and homemade jam. He allowed cakes to dry out, but the trifle remained not quite loved. Like an orphan, Marvin said. Pinky looked up from the scrubbing pot. Could he be alluding to her? But no, he was pressing his thumbs onto the cake, assessing its degree of staleness. So, this is where Edith Perlman sort of, she leaves kind of breadcrumbs, you know, for us to follow a particular trail. And Pinky looks up when she hears orphan because she thinks it applies to her. But he's talking about the trifle. Hi guys, nice to see you. So he's talking about the trifle. So it's not about her, but oh, there's something vis-a-vis her parents that we're going to find out. But here again, we hear about Marvin's standards. It's the thickest cream, it's the freshest eggs, and the jam is nothing but homemade. So they have their standards for this. And the name of the restaurant is The Local. What does that name tell us?
It's home county. It's where the locals
are. Yeah. This is home. We're not trying to be international, cosmopolitan, and so on. We are the local. And now also with regard to food, what are they saying? There's an expression, right? Eat locally, eat local or something, or grow local. What is it? Grow local, yes. You know, the farmers.
Locally grown products as well, yeah.
Yeah, so you want, in for those who know food and are concerned about food in a manner more so than the next person, you know, the regular person, they know that it's important for food to be grown locally so that it's freshest. And so by the name, you know, we're talking about here. We're not aspiring to be all over the world and so on. We're just talking about here. So it's a little bit way of kind of understating things, which Marvin likes to do. Okay, and now we meet up with Pinky's orphanness or lack thereof. She was a half orphan, I'm on the top of 68 at most, and she couldn't be sure even of that. Her father's name was unknown, but that didn't make him dead. He was a number on a folder and some recorded attributes. Caucasian, 5'11", without inherited defects, free of disease, at least on the morning he had donated his sperm. But who knew? Maybe he had picked up some slow organism the very next day. Maybe he was dying in agony right this minute, and she, his daughter, was not at his bedside, did not even guess that he was gasping for air. He had been 20 at the time of the donation, a graduate student in physics. Perhaps he was still a graduate student. He'd be 38 now. They often haunted their departments for decades doing lab chores, skipping down. But maybe Jerkoff had earned his degree after all. She is so funny. Maybe he was working in a lab close to her present home in Godolphin. So Pinky is a person of imagination and a little bit of drama too. And so, you know, we have scenario number one, her father is dying and she doesn't even know about it. Scenario number two, he's a graduate student that has never graduated really because he's just hanging around the department. And, or maybe he lives right here and she doesn't know it, in Godolphin, that leafy wedge of Boston. At noontime, he'd walk into the local in search of an omelette. And that tells us what she's thinking about and why she has a variety of fantasies, because that's really the fantasy that she's interested in. That's the one that's closest to home. When will I ever meet my father? He'd make a reservation and he'd come in a little late and Pinky would serve him and someone would note the resemblance but he was tall, at least according to the form he'd filled out, so why was she only average? Had he lied about his height? So, you know, he could be a shirker, he could be a, somebody at, with a terminal illness. He might be a liar. That was her father, sociopath. You know, so she runs the gamut of, you know, the potential of what her father could be. Her mother? Both of her mothers, a pair of lanky opinions. Okay, what is the difference between how she characterizes her mother, her mothers, and what we've just heard about her father's, her father?
Well, there's nowhere near elaboration of description, you know. This, she just said this was their profession, and that's it.
Right. And so we're going to hear they're a pharmacologist, a pediatric nurse, but we're not going to hear, you know, all of these fantasies clearly, because the person who's not there is the one who you fantasize about. But to call any pair of parents lanky opinions, you know, is to you know, there's a part of it that's funny. There's a part about it that's dehumanizing, you know? She's calling her mother an opinion. And that doesn't mean they're not opinionated, but the fact that she can describe her parents in that way as a kind of comment, you know, as a talking head, as it were, is very significant. And of course we know from all sorts of family situations that the parent who is not there is the saintly parent, and the parent who's on the ground doing all the hard work is the one who receives the wrath of the child. And so, you know, and you can hear some anger in there, and we're going to hear some more. One of them, Paula Pinkerton. Oh, did somebody say something? No. Okay. One of them, Paula Pinkerton, was a pharmacologist. The other, Mary Kelly, provider of the womb, was a pediatric nurse. So first, a mother is an opinion. Second, she's a womb. Pinky had abandoned them the day she turned 17. So, okay, so there we see the anger, and now more. She didn't go far. Godolphin was only 50 miles from Providence. I want to live where nobody knows me, she wrote. You've got to understand, I don't hate you. My post office box is 105446. Don't come after me. I'll write every week. I don't hate you. They write back. We wouldn't dream of coming after you, they wrote. Self-actualization is our watchword. We'll send refills of your Ritalin to the post office. Pinky had stopped taking Ritalin a year ago. Coffee worked much better. For a while, she had sold the pills in downtown Providence. Later, she simply flushed them down the toilet. In Godolphin, she checked into the Y, and she found the local 5 days later. So what do we learn from the correspondence between parents and child? What do we learn about the parents? What do we learn about the child?
The parents were, okay, well, Pinky's going out, and the parents are like, maybe emotionally detached. Okay, you go on your journey. Mm-hmm. Kind of. We'll send you your medicine, but it's like there's a disconnect emotionally.
Right, right. So there's some kind of, there's a disconnect, there's a detachment. We know there's a detachment because they didn't know that for a whole year she had not taken her medication, right? So there's something, although, you know, we're all, parents, we all have blind spots. So, you know, we hear her anger, but we don't know what the reality is. Although we do learn a couple of important things about her mothers. Number one, if she says she needs the space, they're going to give her the space. You know, we wouldn't dream of coming after you. But then they say something about themselves. Self-actualization is our watchword. What is self-actualization? You know, so this comes from Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, Abraham Maslow, he famous professor from Brandeis, he had this pyramid where he said, human beings, first we need the very basic. We need food, clothing, shelter, and then relationship. And this last one, the top of the pyramid is this thing called self-actualization, where because of work or family or other relationships or something like that, we reach our full potential. So, and we're self-directed, as it were. So self-actualization is our watchword, tells us that they have some familiarity with the psychology of the day, you know, the psychological verbiage of the day, and also I don't know, it's like a little bit of, are they hippies? Are they, you know, there's something, you know, in their wanting I mean, now I guess we would say it was, we would say it's new agey, but I don't know, you know, in the 60s and 70s, I don't know what it was, but it, they're part of this thing about where, you know, it's a focus on personal growth and that being extremely valuable. And of course we know it is. And she has this journey that she's taking. You know, but we don't know anything about her childhood, although we're going to hear about it, other than when she's 17 and she hasn't taken her pills for a year. But we'll get there. Okay, so turn to page 70. She had failed to find employment, five lines down, in an organic undermarket as opposed to super, the manager explained. So here, you know, political correctness, right? We can't say supermarket because that would imply hierarchy. And we're not into hierarchies. We're all on the same level. And so we call it an undermarket as opposed to a supermarket. She'd been snubbed by a cigar bar downtown. Too young, the interviewer said, but too chunky was what he meant. Face too round, those eyebrows like awnings. Isn't that a great description? The eyebrows, you know, sort of triangular. Oh, fantastic. Skip down to the last paragraph. And this is Marvin interviewing Pinky. And what do you know how to cook, he persisted. Because she said, well, I wasn't really thinking of doing the cooking. And he persists. Well, what do you know how to cook? Okroshka, radish pie, she said fast, eels lots of ways. She thought with sudden dismay of the oven at home. Its door probably hadn't been opened since her departure. Half-empty Chinese carton stood on the counter. Tomato baked with maple, she resumed. It's an unusual dessert. Our dessert is trifle. We make the jam ourselves. I've made jam. But he was no longer listening to her. The trifle is necessary but incidental. She attended silently. We used to be five, he said. Pinky inhaled. We could be five again. She held her breath. What's okroshka? She exhaled. Listen to what Pinky knows how to make. Eels lots of ways, right? Tomato baked with maple. She is a foodie. You know, she is somebody who's... And since her departure, clearly she's the one who cooked in the house because the oven wouldn't have been opened. Her parents are not, and we find out later that they're not as into food as she is, but they happily eat, you know, everything that that she'll make. But Marvin said, now we get to trifle, the dessert. The trifle is necessary but incidental. What is it necessary for?
Like you have to have a dessert at the end of the meal.
Right, right. You have to have a dessert at the end of the meal, which we heard in the first paragraph, people will consume sort of idly, you know, and they won't love it. They expect it, but they can disregard it. And it's not a universally loved dessert, but it's important because part of the meal is the dessert and the real coffee. You know, that's part of the meal. And they take this meal very, very seriously, each course and so on. And necessary but incidental. Necessary because there's a larger purpose to this meal. It's about having people attend to their food because the people who are making their food are creating this ritualized meal, as it were, with all these courses and great attention to the food. So attention to the food is part of the purpose. The other purpose, of course, is relationship. You know, there's nothing like breaking bread, you know, at a table together to create relationship, to sustain relationship, to enhance relationship. We're about to come to Thanksgiving. You know, the people around the table, they're the people who you love more than anything. They're the people who may drive you crazy, but you know, they're your people and there they are around the table. So we understand that the local and Marvin take this Thursday night dinner very, very seriously. Okay, and so Pinky, so he tells Pinky about the trifle from the get-go, right? He hasn't given her the job yet, but clearly he's thinking about it. And because he asks a question, what is the Akroshka, she can exhale because she hears, oh, you know, he's already investing in me if he wants to know about me and what I cook. It's a Russian soup. The recipe calls for cooked chicken, mustard, fresh dill, fresh or dried thyme, and kvass. Did I mention cucumbers? I usually substitute sour cream and white wine and a little stock for the kvass. The recipe also calls for pickles, but I only put them in when it's just we three eating. Guests tend to pucker. So we learn about Pinky that, you know, you're an amazing cook. And she knows, and you can tell she's an amazing cook because she knows how to substitute things for other things. You know, there are those of us who have to follow a recipe the way it says. Many, many years ago, Susan in Birmingham gave me a recipe for sweet potatoes for her father used to bring us. And I have the recipe in her writing because there's no way I could make it without, you know, going through all of the steps. Some people, you know, they learn a recipe and they could just make it. That was Pinky. She could do that. But we also learned that she's attentive to guests. And in a sense, she's telling Marvin, too. We only add the pickles when it's the three of us because we understand guests, you know, it's a little too acute for them, acute a taste. How old are you? 17. Do you want to see my birth certificate? No. Where do you get your eels? She told him about the eel ranch in Rhode Island. He was interested also in her apricot chicken and her okra with figs. Mostly, though, he warned, you will serve and wash up just as you offered. Okroshka, a witty name, whatever it means. It means hodgepodge. He smiled. And your own name? Pinkerton Kelly. I'm called Pinky. So she has both of her mother's last names as her names, right? So Pinkerton and Kelly are her mother's names. They shook hands. Marvin Fior. I'm called Marvin. And this, he extended his hand toward the sidewalk, is Inez. Pinky's going to learn about the family that exists in the local. Not the kind of family that she was raised in, where you have people who raise you, or even people that you're related to biologically. It's a different kind of family. Inez entered with assumed shyness. Skip down. They have, one of the things that Edith Perlman likes to do is she likes to have us go look up things in the dictionary, which I have to do. I don't think there's been one story where I haven't had to look up something. Our beloved commensals. What's a commensal? So it's one organism that benefits from another organism, you know, so she's implying that there's something that we and the mice have our mutual relationship, which of course it's not a mutual relationship. The mice are a bother and, you know, but she calls them commensals. Her laugh erased the scar on her chin. I don't know if you had this experience. I hear a scar on the chin and I immediately think domestic violence. How did Inez get the scar on her chin? She had an accident with a grapefruit knife. You know, she had the accident with a grapefruit knife. So, you know, it's just funny as you go through the story to see where your mind goes. And again, I think this is Edith Perlman showing us, you know, that things are not quite what they seem. She really likes to remind us of that and help us to develop our capacity not to judge prematurely. Pinky looked and looked away. She'd been taught not to goggle at people's unconcealable flaws or at their unconcealable loveliness. So she appreciates, she has a, she's an artist herself. Her cooking is an art, and she has an appreciation for loveliness. But you also see that the people that she called two lanky opinions brought her up with manners, you know? I mean, so we're getting a sense of what her childhood actually was, and she'd been taught things. And teaching, we know, is an act of love. When we teach our children, we teach them because we love them and we're helping them to grow. And they taught her. Skip down. The trifle didn't require the oven. It did require the whole of the supplemental refrigerator, a box the height of a bedside table, the kind of thing college kids used for beer. This refrigerator had been bought especially for the trifle, though it was home also to Kazuki's insulin and the breast milk for Fogg's infant child. So the trifle, which means something unimportant, it has a great deal of importance in this configuration. Sometimes this happened on a Thursday that they bring the baby. The child had a name, but everybody followed Marvin's example and called him Blessed Event. Isn't that fantastic? Blessed Event usually slept placidly in a wicker basket underneath the bar, but sometimes he did wake up. Then someone, not necessarily his family member, but his extended family, someone, whoever was free, would plunge the bottle into a cup of very hot water, and then whoever was least in demand would feed the little fellow. Fogg himself, or Marvin, or Inez, or Pinky, or Kazuki. Occasionally, a trusted guest took on the job. So it's not just the staff of the local, but their guests, too, are part of the family. The trifle was made in two stainless 20-portion pans. So look what Edith Perlman is doing. We hear about the trifle, and then we hear about relationships. And then we hear about trifle, and we hear about the relationships. So this trifle that's not, you know, that is incidental but necessary but incidental is actually, like, you know, woven into everything in this story, but also woven into, you know, the way that they function at the local. You know, they have a whole refrigerator for it, but then they use it for other things as well. Two stainless 20 portion pans. Now Pinky put them side by side on the wooden trestle table, just skipping down. Trout, 40 of them currently occupied a wooden ice chest, patiently awaited Kazuki's attention. Tomatoes, now in a basket, would soon offer their smooth cheeks to Inez's knife. Can you imagine? You know, it's like there's the sentence, she will cut the tomato. And then there's the sentence, they, the tomatoes, will soon offer their smooth cheeks to Inez's knife. You know, this woman loves language. And when she plays with it, she just, you know, she opens our eyes to what cutting a tomato could look like in an extraordinary way. And also, she animates the tomatoes, right? The tomatoes are going to offer their smooth cheeks. So food in this story has a life of its own. And so she animates the tomatoes. Skipping down to the next interchange. I think God created potatoes on behalf of our patat intagam. She spread jam on top of the soaked cake. I think God created potatoes. What's she saying about the patat intagam?
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It is, you know, the highest, you know, potatoes were only created in this world so that they would be in this dish. And what does patat in tagam mean? It means potatoes in a pan. You know, it's another understatement. And yet, you know, it's delicious. And, you know, and that something small can, you know, reach the heights of the universe here. "You are a sentimental goose," he replied. "Goose, goose, shall we do a goose one of these days?" You know, the mind always goes to food. "Oh Lord, yes," with prune dressing. Her mind skidded helplessly back to the Christmas before last. Meanwhile, she dropped custard on the layer of jam, spoonful by spoonful. Her mother's had given a holiday party for 20 people. She had roasted a goose. "You have a rare talent," said one of the guests, rising from the crowded table and lifting his glass, his dyed hair greenish under the cruel light of the chandelier. "Pinky, we love you." And he probably did. They probably all did, those couples. Some tender, some uneasy, some disappointed. She was still covering jam with custard. So Pinky's mind keeps going home. You know, she does want to get away. This is, you know, this is a coming of age story. And so she does need to separate from her parents. But the fact that her mind keeps going home tells you that maybe she doesn't see her mother's only as lanky opinions. Maybe there's more here. And we see that she has not just her mothers who love her, but, you know, 20 other people who come for Christmas who also love her. So, you know, I didn't say about the lanky opinions. An opinion is, you know, it's a dead thing, right? It's, you know, it's something that somebody thinks, you know, or writes. And it, particularly if it's on paper, it's, you know, it's not animate. You know, so that's a way of describing her parents in contrast with the view at Christmas, which was that there's a lot of life and a lot of love in that home. So, you know, we keep getting hints that things are not what they seem. So go to 74, or not what they seem, but not what we might have thought from the beginning. "The custard is depleted," said Marvin. "You are spooning air." Pinky stored the two pans of trifle in the little refrigerator. And then they describe Sunday night at Marvin's, and the staff all come. Pinky thinks that it's expected, middle of that paragraph. "And Marvin toasted our family." And the dark, unused bedrooms upstairs weighed on Pinky's spirits, which were never high on Sundays anyway. For what were they doing back in Providence without Pinky to interpret the news to, or to drag along to a dreary art film, or to hold the sign at a demonstration while they shouted? The two of them in similar but not identical long ash-colored coats and cropped pewter hair. Really, home with its pale walls and engravings and vases of eucalyptus was composed of hundreds of shades of gray. We're getting a little bit more from Pinky. What is her childhood like? So her, yeah, go ahead.
Me?
Yeah, whoever was gonna say something, yeah.
Is your childlike?
Say it again.
It's not very childlike.
It's not very childlike. She goes to adult things all the time, right? She, her parents are political activists. They carry the signs and they shout the shouts. And they watch the news, you know, they are very engaged in the world and in, you know, and concerned with the world. But we noticed that, you know, activist parents could leave the children at home. They don't. They include her in everything. And so it's definitely not your usual childhood. And yet she is part and parcel of everything that they do. Or drag along to a dreary art film. Yeah, you know, a kid is not gonna, you know, an art film for a kid. You know, you do have to say, what were those mothers thinking? But the truth is they always had her with them, which tells us a lot about them too. And Pinky's thoughts just keep going back to them because of what happens on Sundays. Sundays was a day of togetherness. It's when they did all these things, and she's feeling a little low because what would they do without her? You know, she's the person that they, you know, they tell about the news and so on. Okay. Pinky is very concerned about Inez and Marvin because they don't have children. And I already told you, I don't know why they never had children. I suppose you're always asking them why I never got married. No, she wasn't. She'd met plenty of Kazukis, comfortable solitaries, not yearning after men, not yearning after women. Marvin and I discussed it only once. They kept trying, you know. Well, maybe you don't. Anyway, it got too late, and not everyone wants to go to Romania. Who can tell? Who can tell what you'd come back with? And not everyone wants to hire a surrogate or have a blind date with a sperm bank. So, you know, he doesn't know who he's speaking to. I think they've adjusted. And so Pinky, cold with fear, imagined Inez snatching up Blessed Event one Thursday night. Pinky's mind is, you know, the imagination is right there. Running with him into the black street, leaping onto a trolley, then a train, then a bus, finally crossing the Mexican border. Fog, not party to this vision, serenely polished wine glasses. So, Pinky is, she's very concerned about the people that she lives with and the people that she works with. But she puts her dramatic flair onto her concern with others, which is very funny, actually. Christmas, 2 months ago, but she can't stop thinking about home now. She's thinking back. Turkey stuffed with olives had turned out to be like Sunday suppers, only longer. There was a tree and there were presents. Marvin and Inez gave Pinky earrings, which she guessed she'd have to wear. Fogg and his wife gave her a book about the South Pole, which she guessed she'd have to read. Kazuki and his mother gave her a framed print of Hokusai's The Great Wave. She liked it. Her mother sent a red bathrobe. So we know that, you know, she describes her home as 100 shades of gray. So are her mothers learning something about her that they send her a red bathrobe? But red is, you know, that's a color that makes a statement. So, Christmas was 2 months ago now, and she's describing the Christmas that she had in Godolphin, but also, you know, where she was thinking about her Rhode Island family. There was a tree and there were presents, Marvin and I, which she guessed she'd have to wear. Well, twist my arm. She guessed she'd have to read. And his mother gave her a framed print of Hokusai's The Great Wave. She liked it. There was one present she liked. Her mother sent a red bathrobe. Now, what else do we learn about Pinky? She's going to wear the earrings that maybe she doesn't like so much because she loves the person who gave it to her. And she's learned something about, a lot, really, about relationships. From her mother's, and twist my arm. If you're going to give me a present, I'll wear it. Pinky amused the baby. Marvin beat Fogg's wife at chess. Everybody played poker. Kazuki's mother won $3. There was no talk about animal rights, same-sex marriage, the National Endowment for the Arts, or the work of Juna Barnes. That list is so artfully chosen in terms of describing sort of feminist activist women, her mother. Juna Barnes is, you know, a famous feminist writer and thinker. And the National Endowment for the Arts, that's, you know, it's like the people who listen to NPR, you know, the people who are interested in the humanities, animal rights, same-sex marriage. So for Pinky, it's a relief not to be talking politics and not to be talking, you know, these all of these things that she heard of and she knows, but it's a relief for her not to have to have those kinds of conversations. But of course, it also does make her think of home. You know, and then you could say, well, she's thinking, great, I don't have to hear Judna Barnes and I don't have to hear animal rights. And maybe she doth protest too much, right? Maybe she's actually missing it a little bit. 76 at the bottom. The other item was a photograph stuck behind the middle drawer of the bureau. Three people smiled from the snapshot, Inez and Marvin, about 10 years earlier, and an unidentified young man. His gold-rimmed glasses reflected light away from eyes and eyebrows. His hairline receded gently. His lips were drawn back into a sad smile. Not hard to figure out who he was. He was Marvin's business partner. He was Inez's lover. You know? Pinky and her imagination. It's just too good. Now, who is this guy?
It's Inez's brother.
It's her brother. It's her brother. He had been banished, right? Where was he now? How was he faring without his pills? It is so funny, but it also, how's he making, she's always concerned about people. You know, how's he faring without the pills, right? How are they doing without me to talk to? And so on and so forth. Okay, 77 down at the bottom. Most guests were not tourists. Guidebooks ignored the local. It served dinner only on Thursdays and it didn't advertise. A recent newspaper review, newspapers did grudgingly pay attention, praised the food, and then complained about the lack of choice. Choice, what an overvalued commodity, Marvin remarked. And he's the one, the meal is prescribed. You eat what they serve or you don't eat there. But the food is really wonderful, and there's more. The early arrivals were finishing their champagne cocktails. Later ones were beginning theirs. They serve champagne every Thursday night. And so what do? In this dinner? They make every Thursday night a celebration, which is, you know, we are so blessed in our lives. And in truth, we should be celebrating our blessings every single minute. But we're human beings, and we don't always remember to celebrate those blessings. But Marvin, in having champagne every Thursday night, is, you know, they're saying something. They're sort of modeling something for the people who come to that restaurant. Later ones were beginning theirs. The very latest were entering. The folding glass doors, now affixed with storm panes, were drawn together. The next to last customer entered, a furred woman, and how warm that gleaming long-haired collar looked against the wind-chapped face. Kazuki showed her to a table for one. A table for one was a financial loss, but the local did not discriminate against isolates. The last foursome came in now, smiling at people here and there, and the door shut for good. So, you know, the guests, they're regulars. These are people who come back time and time again. Pinky cleared the champagne glasses. In the kitchen, Kazuki ladled out the soup, puree of kale and broccoli. He put a spoonful of vinegary tomatoes in each bowl. And Fogg poured wine. So, again, they are attentive both to the food and to their customers. And, you know, a murmur of voices, a gentle slurping, the mild clatter of dishes being removed. Pinky thinking toward to the baby she soothed, right? You know, a few words to the baby to soothe her. A murmur of voices, a gentle slurping, the mild clatter of dishes being removed. a few minutes of repose, the salad now with horseradish dressing. Marvin understands that in art, in music for sure, the pauses are as important as the notes themselves, right? And so the pauses between this artful meal are very important, and they know how to do them. A few minutes of repose, and then the next course, because we're savoring everything. Forks clinked against plates, voices caressed voices. There's love being expressed here. Pinky filled the dishwasher. Kazuki slid trays of patat out of the oven and replaced them with trays of trout, which he had butterflied and lightly oiled and sprinkled with his private herb mixture. Inez stirred lemongrass carrots and caramelized onions. Every single food is attended to. Pinky warmed the baby Biebs' bottle. And why should the baby be deprived, right? She too needs a warm bottle. The five workers formed an assembly line. Kazuki at trout and patat, Pinky at carrots and onions, Marvin and Inez and Fogg without apparent haste. Without apparent haste, we can not rush, which is unusual for our world, right? Whisking the dishes to the patrons. The final two tables were served only by Marvin and Fogg. Inez, seated on a low stool behind the bar, had taken the now noisy baby in her arms, and only someone standing in the back corner near the restrooms could see her in the bar mirror, crouched over the little thing. Could see her, though not her scar. Could see her, though not her prominent canines. What's going on here? So Pinky is noticing this, and we're going to hear in just a sentence or two. Marvin stood in the corner near the restrooms, almost invisible. But Pinky, in the archway of the kitchen, knew what to look for. A metallic curve catching a gleam of light, his mustache, starched wedge, four small triangles of pale blue neon. He was watching through the mirror, the gentle motherly crouch, the chin that had once been slashed, the mouthful of muddled teeth guarded by fangs. So what is present in this little restaurant is celebrations of life, expressions of love through food and through words, and also present, because in life we get the whole package, is our disappointments and our losses and our the things that that give us pain. And so all of that is there, and all of it is, you know, it's just part of the totality. Peace descended upon Pinky, the contentment of the nourisher. The kid she'd been preparing splashy meals had never felt such satisfaction, though her skinny mothers tried to be appreciative. But they would have preferred suppers of soy butter and Granny Smith's. When she served a krushka, they liked the pickles best. Trifle, they would have gagged. So what has led to Pinky to where she is now? She's very different from her mothers. They could care less about food. She loves the preparation of food. She's a nourisher. That's how she expresses love in this world. And so she has found herself a place of people like her, where food and the preparation of food is also an expression of love. But now her skinny mothers, they tried to be appreciative. She knows that even though she felt differently from them, that they accepted her offerings with, as much appreciation as they could, because she was offering it, not because they had any interest in food whatsoever. Page 80. Peace descended upon the customers, too. So Pinky has found peace in a place that people are like her, the customers also. And what is it that creates the peace? They bent forward towards each other across their messy plates, or in the case of the woman alone, bent forward toward an invisible companion. They conferred about business, about art, about the neighbors. Pinky heard the baby's pleased burp, but only because she was listening for it. There are sounds that are comforting. The smoking customer heard it too. She saw his face turn confusedly toward the kitchen. Some funny noise, oh well. He stubbed out his cigarette and returned to his table. In a seemingly leisurely fashion, the five staff members cleared the plates. A few minutes of repose. The cheese course now, a bit of Roquefort, a bit of pimento chèvre. Kazuki was whipping the cream. Then another wait. How important the space between events, Marvin said. So this Hokusai, the artist Hokusai, had any of you heard of him? Him, her? I don't know whether it's. I think it's a him. Anyway, he paints waves. You know, that's his scenes are waves, and we know that Pinky liked this, but it's in the consciousness now. Despite this offhandedness, the cream settled in gentle peaks on one pan and then on the other until each looked like a Hokusai scene. Inez and Pinky and Fogg, I'm just a little further down, served trifle, and Marvin went around with his coffee pot. Yes, caffeinated, he said, without apology. And wasn't it amazing? It was always amazing. People drank the caffeinated coffee. And Pinky was sure that within an hour, they'd all be asleep like the baby behind the bar, now blissfully snoozing on his mother's shoulder. And she too, she who had needed 300 milligrams of trazodone when she was living at home, she too slept 8 hours every night unmedicated. But tonight she was suddenly awake. And then she meets the brother, and she talks to him. And it's a critical, critical conversation. So turn to 82. I drove up on a whim, but I got here too late to wake my sister, right? So Inez, oh, so I thought I'd crash, and she recognized him from the photo, right? So I thought I'd crash at the local, but the lock, he rubbed his thick brows. Could we have some coffee? Pinky warmed the pot and poured coffee into mugs. He got brandy from the bar and laced each mug. She took the last piece of trifle from the refrigerator and cut it in half, put it on two plates on the trestle table. He laid out two forks. They sat opposite each other. His hair had receded further. So he knows this place like the back of his hand because he had that job before Pinky had it, right? Before he went out on his own. Hey, this goo's better than it used to be. Not quite loved, a foundling. Isn't that how he says it? You know, Marvin, he knows Marvin. Pretty much, how does she seem? Pinky considered, melancholy some of the time, resigned the rest of the time, happy on Thursdays. She sipped, took courage. I saw you in a photograph. I thought you were her paramour. Hell no, just the kid brother. And her chin, it wasn't you who cut it up? Inez did that to herself. No, don't look like that. It was an accident with a grapefruit knife. I figured you'd been exiled. Dramatic, aren't you? I walked out to live my own life. Our mother and father are dead, but Marvin and Inez kept acting like parents. Any more trifle? No, how did Marvin and Inez act like parents? My mother's, they mostly march for causes and otherwise sit in armchairs. They wanted me to tell them everything I did and thought. Hey, how many mothers have you got? In armchairs talking, hardworking women growing old. How jolly the red of this bathrobe. Her eyes stung. There was a long silence, a peaceful lag. Two, Pinky heard someone say. I have two mothers. Was that voice hers? I had a father too, but none of us met him. He was necessary but incidental. So there are some things that are incidental or not important in our lives that are responsible for everything, you know? So this one day with this young man, Pinky is in the world. But she understands that actually, you know, the father that she fantasizes about is not her real parent. Her parents are her parents. And here she has the example of Inez's brother, who went out and is able to come home, right? He had to make his way in the world too. He had to separate too. And yet he's able to come back. And so Pinky is able to say, I have two mothers. Would you like to borrow my sleeping bag? I'll spread it out behind the bar, he said. It was a month later. Kazuki had made the trifle this week. It's a beautiful book ending, right? Pinky had made the trifle this week. Now Kazuki made the trifle this week. Pinky had made the okroshka. So she's putting her stamp on the place. As always, the reservation list was full. The meal was venison braised with raspberries. Fogg's brother had shot the deer. Patrons were entering. One couple arrived on a motorcycle. A cab brought four others. The pair Pinky was watching for was coming by car. They were a little late. That would be Mary's doing, fussing about locks, about lights, while Paula stood at the door of the house twirling her keys and whistling. But they were not very late. Pinky was opening a bottle of champagne when she saw them come in. Marvin ushered them to the crescent table. Inez poured mineral water and bestowed her generous smile. In the kitchen archway, Kazuki bowed. Fogg's hand rested briefly on Pinky's shoulder. Easy does it, he said. Carrying two golden glasses, Pinky walked forward to greet her parents. So beautiful. But what has happened? Pinky now makes the okroshka. And when her parents come, Fogg knows to put the hand on the shoulder. Easy does it. You know, they really have become her family, but they've become her family in a way that she's able to return to her family of origin. You know, they haven't, her finding her place here has really allowed her to go back home, or at least to invite her parents and to tell them where she is. And so on. And such a beautiful story. Tell me.
It really is.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Say that again, Lisa.
It's a great story. I loved it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's beautiful. We're gonna see this in another story, and we've seen it before in other collections, but. Edith Perlman she's a master at showing love, not telling you these people love each other, but showing it in the details of how they interact and what they give to each other. And you know, she performs magic that way. I'm really convinced of it, because you get at to the end of the story. And you realize like how much love and emotion and everything has been expressed without her ever telling you, you know, that it has been expressed. And, you know, really, really extraordinary. So she has her place here, and she's able to incorporate her family of origin. And you know, so it's Pinky's story, but it's all of our stories, right? It's the story of, you know, how you are able to grow up and how you are able to assert an identity that's... Sorry, hold on just one second. Yeah. Assert an identity that's different from your parents and yet still be able to love them and appreciate them and come to terms with some anger that you had at them. So, there we go. Okay, any other thoughts before we close?
Beautiful.
Thank you. Other thoughts? Other comments? All right. Have a wonderful week. And we are meeting next week, aren't we? Let's see. Yes, I have down on the 21st. It's before Thanksgiving. Are people going to be not going to be here? Okay, we are going to be. We're not going to be here. Okay. Okay. So I'll just record it and I'll put it on the website and you'll be able to have it then. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So for those of you who we won't see, have a very happy, wonderful Thanksgiving. And for those of you who we will see, we're on to vegetarian chili, I think. No. Whatever is the next one, we're on to it. Okay. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Pleasure. My pleasure. Great to see you.
Bye-bye.
Always. Bye, Barbara.